All right. Thanks for being here today, Leo and Charles. Do you go by Chuck, I heard?
So General Jacoby was not able to join us today, but it's Leo Tillman here.
Okay. Thanks, yeah. Leo.
This is Chuck Jacoby. Yeah.
He was hiding behind the tree.
Made it. Chuck, I guess he made it. Great.
Yeah, I was able to shovel my way to a phone.
All right. Thanks so much to you both for being here. So just as a little background about the book, Agility offers a first comprehensive assessment of the fundamental nature of organizational agility and describes the essential leadership practices for achieving it. It shows agility is far superior to mere speed or adaptability. Pinpointing its distinctive features, the book defines agility as the ability to detect and assess changes in the competitive environment in real time and take decisive action. So let's just dive right in. I would love to hear how you got the book idea for Agility.
First of all, it's a great pleasure to be with you today. To us, agility is a universal concept that applies to everybody. It applies to individuals. It applies to small businesses, teams, as well as large organizations. Well, it applies to countries. And it's particularly important today, given the level of change and the level of disruption all around us. And it spans technology, it spans societal changes, it spans geopolitics. So we came to this topic from entirely different perspectives. And I will let Chuck describe his path, which is fascinating. But to me, it was all in business and finance, where we saw companies not adapting to change rapidly enough, but even more importantly, being always on the defense, being reactive to it. In this notion of being proactive, looking forward, capturing the initiative is what separates agility from flexibility or adaptability or other things.
Well, kind of further to what you just said about it not being, you look at agility as not being so much reactive and defensive, and how agility reinforces resilience and therefore allows companies to avoid what you referred to in the book as lethal risks. Can you share a little more detail? And since we're a business show, we'd love to hear some insights that our listeners may be able to use about how their business can ensure they're staying agile and not just adapting.
So one of the challenges that any business person or any manager faces is this notion that there are a million of things in the environment we could be potentially watching, and how do we know which ones to focus on? So one of the very practical approaches in the book that we introduce is to think about your business or your environment in terms of risk. When it comes all the way from the world of finance and large organizations, but this notion that stepping back and thinking deeply about which risks apply to my business and how would various developments in economy and society and technology would affect my business really focuses your mind about the kinds of things you need to be watching. And then, of course, it's a matter of routine. We all are consumed with day-to-day execution of our strategy, of our plan. So one of the important leadership tasks that the book puts forward is the need to step back and think about these issues and allocate time and resources, because they can be existential to any of our businesses.
One of the interesting things about the book is that you bring both a business and a military perspective to the notion of agility. And it isn't intuitively obvious to me, or it wasn't, how those two kinds of organizations have common needs for agility and common core competencies that are necessary for success. Chuck, can you tell us a little bit about how that lines up in terms of how do business and the military have these kinds of needs in common, and what are the core competencies that are required for both to be agile?
Right, thanks. Terrific to be on. Leo talked to the two different paths we took to get to agility, and his was finance, mine was military. And as we sat down to write the book, the more we worked on it, the more we came to the same line of thinking that there was some universality to this. And the common point is that we're talking about competitive environments. And you'll notice there's a lot of quotations from the great military theorist Clausewitz. He wrote the book on war, but really it's a book on conflict and competitive environments. And so we think that in order not just to survive or not just to, hang in there and barely meet the requirement, to actually succeed, excel, and win in a competitive environment that we're in right now, economically, politically, militarily, that we needed to nail down this concept of agility. Agility for the military had become a buzzword in the 37 years I spent in the military. Every time we had a budget slash or a force structure cut or a acquisition program gutted, what we would say to ourselves was, well, that, we'll get by. We'll continue to do the mission, but we'll be leaner or more nimble or more flexible, and in the end, we'll be more agile. And frankly, I started at this thing from the frustration of, this is not the way to deal with a competitive environment if you plan to win, especially as these terms lose meaning through the depth and breadth of the organization. So if one level of management thinks agility means one thing and another thinks it means another, you're headed for what we call becoming a sitting duck for going away in a truly competitive environment like we see today, especially in business and especially in small business.
It's interesting that writers like Clausewitz or even Sun Tzu, the observations they made 100 years ago still resonate so strongly. Talk a little bit more about the wisdom that you found from Clausewitz and how that applies today.
We want to be careful not to take some of the practice that he writes. He really writes a book on war as theory and practice, and so you have to be careful about how much you drag from it. But the theory part of it is very meaningful, and the way the U.S. military has kind of latched onto this is it's really fundamental to our doctrine, and it's all about how to win in an environment that is completely uncertain, shrouded in what Clausewitz calls fog and friction. Changes happen every day, and unless you are immersed in the environment, studying the environment, what Leo kind of invented the term risk intelligence, but it's a fingertip feel for the environment, and that you plan for this and you have contingency plans and those kinds of things, you're not going to win in that environment. And so I think that is all, the word uncertainty, fog and friction, these are things that today's business leaders, whatever the size of the business, are dealing with right now. And I'm a trustee on the Elpamarb board, and we deal a lot with, increasingly so, with regions throughout Colorado, especially the underserved regions. And I would say that, they live in a world of uncertainty, and it's essential for the businesses throughout Colorado, not just in the metro region, Pikes Peak, to think in terms of agility. So hopefully we can help with that.
And you
one of the one of the key revelations for me coming from the world of business and finance in Clausewitz was the notion that the goal of it all is to dominate change instead of being dominated by it. And I think that's very true. As a business person, as a manager, as a leader, do we want to be always in a reactive way, so responding to our adversaries or changes, or do we want to be on the offense? That's one of the principles, but there's so many. And they're all grounded, again, as General Jacoby said, in the understanding of our environment, and then a coherent view of how you best operate in it. And again, it applies to everybody.
The ideas you're bringing up about business and military and how it applies to both, I love how you cited some examples, specifically with IMAX as kind of a business example, how they put these practices into place to position themselves better. And then also, I enjoyed reading the section where you mentioned some historical examples about what you described as organizational agility, dating back even to the Napoleonic Wars. Can you share a little more about each of those examples, just to add a little more color to what you mean in a business sense and a military sense with this agility concept?
Sure. Well, let me start in business. One of the examples that is near and dear to the mountain region is a fascinating transformation of Western Union over the past few years. You know, one of the best-known brands with more retail locations than McDonald's and Starbucks combined, but grounded in physical infrastructure all around the world, entering the world of digital change and completely different e-commerce ecosystems, and embarking on this fundamentally interesting and transformative business model in technology transformations, and doing it very successfully. So we spent quite a bit of time talking about that experience as an example of the essential steps of agility, detecting what's happening around us, really deeply questioning what it means to us and our organization, and then creating a decisive plan for change.
Let's take that down a level. 50 years ago, if you watch an old movie, Western Union was delivering telegrams. That's not what they do today. How did they confront that problem, and what do they do now?
So one of the key dilemmas that Western Union faced was the interaction between traditional brick-and-mortar businesses and new digital businesses. And, of course, they wanted to do both, but it was quite a difficult strategic decision on how to integrate the two. And they have discovered, for instance, that some of the clients who they thought were truly committed to brick-and-mortar businesses were really responsive to doing some of the transactions online. So all of a sudden, that became really integrated. But there was quite a number of other decisions. One of them was that Western Union has always had great expertise and was well-known in risk management. So as they were transforming their organization, they really invested more in this capability and truly turned it into a competitive advantage. Again, you take something that could be existential to your business, and then you detect it, and then you turn what could be really problematic into a great opportunity.
Yeah, one of the things, this is Chuck, one of the things that I really loved about Leo's work with Western Union and IMAX as well, was how they turned the risk to their brand into a positive what we would say protected that risk, but not only protected it, but pushed it forward and used it to, in IMAX's case, really revolutionized the entertainment experience. And the same thing is true for Western Union, was to revolutionize the money exchange experience. And so, you might have gone, the natural reaction for humans and for businesses is to go into a defensive crouch and defend the brand and, insist that, we're going to make customer satisfaction or something that is not relevant to the current problem set and not move forward. And both these companies decided to take the opposite, go on the offensive and enhance their brand and use their brand to change and really change the market space.
You know, it's interesting. As I read the IMAX story, which I'd like you to flesh out a little bit more so the audience can understand it, I thought about the difference in reaction between IMAX on the one hand and Kodak on the other. Whereas IMAX found itself in a threat position, and you look at how they reacted as opposed to Kodak, who tried to, I think, buckle down to where it was and it didn't work out so well. Can you talk a little bit about how the IMAX transformation worked?
Sure. Well, IMAX is a fascinating example because it embodies so many themes that comprise agility. So it was a little company that produces great movies for aquariums and museums, and it was stunning, but it was tiny, and very few people knew about it. but it had a huge vision to break into mainstream entertainment. It involved dramatic changes to the business model and getting new kinds of partners. And then they go into the digital revolution, and their entire existence gets threatened. So they need to now fundamentally transform their technology, and it takes years to do. But they know that even that would not solve their problems, because even if they transform their technology and their projectors no longer look like a huge fridge, they will not be able to entice as many audiences because they don't have the content. So they, on the spot, by empowering their organization to think creatively and overcome challenges, which is an essential element of agility called tactical agility, they invent a whole new groundbreaking process of converting mainstream Hollywood movies into IMAX format. It became known as digital restructuring and fundamentally transformed movie making. And they did the same with 3D movies, and they did the same with many other aspects. So it was a fascinating example of both strategic agility, where boards and executives make big picture calls on the environment, but they also empower the whole organization to innovate and take smart risks and be ready for setbacks. And by the way, all of this is happening while their stock price goes down, while competitors emerge, while environments change. So we use this example to really set the stage for the discussion of agility and really illustrate so many facets of it that makes completely different from speed or adaptability.
Yeah, and the other thing that I liked about IMAX, and it's true in the military as well, the leadership, using a business term, never lost track of what business they were in, and the leadership was able to visualize for the company and all the players and partners that they gained how they wanted this to unfold, and they had anchor points, and so it was purposeful change, it was purposeful investment towards the visualization of what they wanted IMAX to be, which was this new entertainment experience for everyone, which all of us can really understand, all of us moviegoers can really see the outcome.
It's interesting. So they went from a small museum concept to this conversion of Hollywood films in a much larger distribution role, which, again, is, I think, an aggressive, proactive approach to risk. Let's talk about, you mentioned that the alternative to that is a defensive approach, which often doesn't work. Can you think of an example of a business that you can identify that adopted a defensive approach to risk management and ended up poorly off as a result?
Well, Kodak, who you mentioned, was certainly one of them. You can argue that Sears, an iconic American institution, was another one, but they all follow a very similar pattern. As environments change, they either don't understand or accept the change in the environment, or they become very defensive. So they start protecting their market share, their brand, so they stop investing in R&D, they stop proactively approaching new market opportunities, and one of the arguments we make in the book, which comes all the way from finance, is that risk and the amount of risk that you take as a business is not positive or negative. It's just a tool that you use in deciding how to pursue your strategy. So taking too much risk is a sure recipe to go out of business, but taking not enough risk can be equally lethal. So with a lot of companies that fail to adapt, we see them becoming too risk-averse, not taking enough risk, not investing, not doing it purposefully, as Chuck said, and that gets them in as much trouble as some of the companies that take reckless amounts of risk.
Yeah, and because both of you seem to be willing to take on some older historical examples, one of the best I can think of is after World War I, everyone in Europe knew the power of the defense, and that to maneuver was a death sentence for most armies. And so France, Belgium, and the Netherlands had as many tanks and just as good as tanks as the Germans had as we approached World War II. But they decided to emphasize going on the defense and digging them into fortified lines, the Maginot, part of the Maginot Line. And what they thought, they were doubling down on what they thought they had learned from World War I. And what they had done was put themselves at enormous risk by being completely on the defense while with the same equipment and the same experience, another army seized the offense and decimated the European allies at the beginning of World War I.
Well, all this kind of ties together. You mentioned risk intelligence, and you said that's a term Leo coined. And you talked about, you know, how risk, they're aware of risk. They're aware of what they're doing in their business. But what I thought was interesting in Chapter 4 when you talk about this is some can be great at identifying the risks, even doing analysis on the risk. And then also they're great at making money, keeping their income statements, balance sheets, all of that in line, but they don't connect the two. So it possibly, again, because we're a business show, we're trying to give some tips and tricks and also hear how it comes through in the authors we talk to in their books. Can you walk us through perhaps some ways businesses can ensure that they're connecting those two pieces, their key business metrics, with the risk piece? I thought that was just really interesting, and I've seen it kind of in business.
I think it's amazingly enough, considering that risk has been actively developing as a science for the past 30 years and a great deal of experience and knowledge has been accumulated. What you just described, which is the disconnect between strategic decision-making and risk, remains to this day. And it's probably one of the most greatest challenges facing specifically large organizations, but also small ones too. Entrepreneurs think about risk intuitively, and they think about it just in the course of their business and their decisions. How would particular action affect my balance sheet or my ability to sustain growth or my organizational capacity? But at large organizations, strategic decision making, which is again based on very complex set of choices and alternatives, it remains disconnected from risk. So you could be considering the next M&A transaction and acquiring a large player, and you could be analyzing all sorts of things, including what it would do to your market presence and market shares and your income. But you may forget to analyze how would risk come into play. One of the great examples of that is Wachovia's acquisition of Golden West right before the financial crisis, where they truly failed to analyze the risk that this transaction would add to their balance sheet. And that was one of the main factors that brought Wachovia, one of the fastest growing, one of the premier franchises in the United States, down.
We've been talking to Leo Tillman and Charles Jacoby, the authors of Agility. And I'd love to go on and discuss, for example, D-Day and some other examples of how we saw agility work out in the military, but I'm afraid we're out of time. For those of you who want to hear about how D-Day and its agility characteristics,